The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back. As we head into hour two, phone number for you, 602-508-0960. Anything on your mind, 602-508-0960. Young David, happy to take your call. Young David, I haven't asked you about your pins recently. What do you got? You have one on today? I can't tell. What? 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 Diane.
I've got company.
Well, we're mass communicating here.
Mass communicating to the world that I have company in the immediate vicinity.
Okay, well, it's good that you have visitors. Do you have a pin?
Yes, I do have a pin. It's all the way with LBJ.
Okay. Why today? Usually you
try.
Why? Yeah, why?
Why? That's the big question.
Oh,
why?
I think I could guess.
You want to guess first?
I can. I'll guess. Because I think it's a point you've instructed me on if I guess right. Was it at this point that he said he was not going to run again?
Exactly.
Yeah.
This week in 1968, Lyndon Baines Johnson said, "I shall not seek nor accept the nomination of my party for President of the United States."
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help but wonder if the current resident of the White House would do the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder. Do you think so? I don't know. It doesn't look like it. The reason
not
it doesn't
right
look
now.
Like it
no.
is because if there were some plan— It's just too hard to keep secret. That's the thing. It's just too hard to keep these, especially in politics. Everyone wants to, in politics, especially in the advisory class and the consultant class, they like to leak. They like to leak because they love the attention, and they love the attention because they never get the press that their bosses get, right? So they all want to have a special relationship with a reporter. And or journalists in general. And I just think if there was this plan, it would have been leaked by now, and there's zero on it. Go ahead.
Well, in Johnson's situation, it was a top-down decision. It was a personal decision of his, I think, based on some heavy-set grief to do with the war and the treatment of it.
Yeah, and he saw the popularity.
Personal conviction that he was unable to bring the country forward to another 4 years, and he also had health history, and he believed truly that he would die before the end of another 4-year term was out. Funnily enough, he would in his civilian life.
Also the popularity of Eugene McCarthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Robert Kennedy. Eugene McCarthy, if I'm not mistaken, get clean with Gene and all that, if I'm not mistaken, I think I'm right about this. I think he endorsed Ronald Reagan for president.
I don't know.
In 1980,
he ran independently all throughout the 70s.
Mm-hmm. I think in 1980 he endorsed Ronald Reagan for president. You know who else did? Ralph Abernathy. He was Martin Luther King's number two, and what Martin Luther King Jr. describes as his best friend, Ralph Abernathy Jr., Reverend Ralph Abernathy Jr., I should say. He endorsed Ronald Reagan in 1980. It was interesting how many, people that you wouldn't have expected did endorse Ronald Reagan in 1980. That's how bad it was under Jimmy Carter. I don't suspect. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know. But the idea that from unexpected quarters you will get endorsements for Trump, possibly. I don't know if anything would be as monumental as that. The closest thing we had in the past would have been since 1980 would have been, Joe Lieberman of recent memory, blessed memory. He endorsed John McCain. He ran as a vice president on the Democratic ticket and endorsed John McCain for president in 2008. I believe I saw Elon Musk said you have to vote for Trump, or at least Republicans. And will there be some big music star or actor that endorses Donald Trump that we don't see coming? A little harder to fathom, just a little. Lyndon Johnson died ignominiously on his Texas ranch. He was an ill man. He was a depressed man. And something got to him. I don't know. I don't know if the exactly perfect biography has been written about him, but you look at that those last pictures of him with his long hair. I mean, he was very reclusive.
Watched
wasn't
a lot of television in those days.
Yeah, highly reclusive.
I found a headline from the Christian Science Monitor.
Sure.
From October 24th of 1980.
Yeah.
Former Democratic Senator Eugene McCarthy announced he will vote for Ronald Reagan
for
president
like
and denied ever saying that the GOP candidate was out of touch with reality.
Do that again.
And denied ever saying the GOP candidate was out of touch with reality.
Oh. He denied ever saying
that.
Yeah.
Mr. McCarthy said he had come to the conclusion that Mr. Reagan's positions on nuclear disarmament and taxes were better than President Carter's, and that the Republican nominee has run a more dignified campaign.
Yeah, that's the easy one. Just say he ran a more dignified campaign. But if you think about the comparisons, they are legion. Of course, the inflation in the economy is most obvious. But, you know, the international scene, foreign affairs, you know, we saw something like a dozen countries fall to communism in the mid-70s into the Soviet sphere. And much of it by dint of Jimmy Carter not standing up for our allies everywhere from Iran to Central America and in the Horn of Africa as well. He gave a famous speech at Notre Dame saying we had to get over, his phrase, our inordinate fear of communism. We had to get over our inordinate fear of communism. And then he famously, in a meeting with Brezhnev, kissed him on the cheek. These signals mattered. And they're signals that Democrats, as president, except for Bill Clinton, really never understood. I guess by that I mean Barack Obama and Joe Biden. They never really understood that these signals matter. And when you appease dictators, dictators run with it. And when you put distance or shade between you and your allies, that sends a message to the autocrats as well. And so you have seen this with Joe Biden, as opposed to really the peaceful part. I mean, the peaceful era we were in under Donald Trump. This is why it seems to me that there's a direct and proportional analysis with the heated rhetoric against Donald Trump versus the reality that only requires us to go back in our heads about 4 years. But we have such amnesia about everything, and we are thrown such confusion, to use Rob's word earlier. We are so fuddled on this point. We have a controlled experiment. Were our allies doing better under Donald Trump, or were they doing better under Joe Biden? Allies were attacked under Joe Biden. They were not attacked under Donald Trump. Were our enemies invading other countries under Donald Trump, or were they invading them under Joe Biden? Yes to the latter, no to the former. Did things seem to be a little bit more under control vis-a-vis North Korea and China under Donald Trump or Joe Biden? Joe Biden had a conversation today with Xi Jinping, the first since, I guess, about a year ago. Do you have any confidence at all that it went well? They put out a readout that looked so heavily scripted. Is there anything you can believe from Joe Biden anymore? Can you even believe him? I know people like to talk about the lies of Donald Trump, but find me a monumental one. Find me a meaningful lie of Donald Trump's. Most of it had to do with, you know, incredulous bragging stuff. But when Joe Biden, I mean, denies the reality of his own signature on his own executive orders and denies saying things he clearly said and makes up and invents stories of things that never happened. We only learned a week ago, at long last, that his whole political origin story was a fraud. The idea of how he got into politics, how he became a criminal defense attorney or a public defender. All a lie about a case that went the exact other way that he said it did over a client that he never had. Everything about Joe Biden is basically, I think, everything is probably the wrong word, but most things that come out of his mouth, if he told you it was raining outside, you'd want to look outside and independently verify it. You simply cannot trust this man. You simply cannot. Interesting that there are so many similarities between the Biden record and the Carter record. There was no question Carter was going to run again. That is one distinction. And the other distinction is you did have some rather famous people from the liberal side of the aisle come out and support for Ronald Reagan. I just don't think you're going to get it. I just don't think you're going to get it with Donald Trump. So we're going to have to rely on one-on-one. We're going to have to rely on everyone becoming an evangelist for what you got to do to save this country. You just got to do it. Do you think we can take 4 more years of Joe Biden? Let me put it this way. Do you think we can take 4 more years that will be like the last? And if not with Joe Biden, with Kamala Harris, do you think that's an improvement? Insufficient options, as they say. We'll be right back. Our friends at the Midas Gold Group War Room have a message for us. The veterans there, they point out that the Federal Reserve note does not belong to you. It belongs to the Federal Reserve Bank, while the federal debt doesn't belong to the Federal Reserve Bank. That belongs to you. This is your wake-up call to what the Midas Gold Group veterans believe the central bank and government are trying to do, a controlled demolition of our current system with a central bank digital currency to take complete and utter control of our transactional freedoms. Protect yourself. Turn this wake-up call into a phone call to the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group at 480-360-3000. Or go to MidasGoldGroup.com. That's 480-360-3000 or MidasGoldGroup.com. Always faithful, Midas Gold Group. MAGA and proud of it. MidasGoldGroup.com. I guess related to thinking about that line, MAGA and proud of it, related to my monologue in the previous hour, you know, that they want you miserable. They want everything to be awful, always on the eve of destruction. What was that song, weird song you played for me yesterday from 1969? I don't remember what it was.
Oh, we talked about in the year 25.
Yeah, that's it, 25. Yeah, that kind of thing. End of the world as we know it. Population bomb, nuclear winter. All these efforts to fear, to instantiate fear, fright, paranoia, distrust. You know, it puts everyone on edge. Surprise, surprise, it's led to a societal mental health crisis. And so, you know, I was thinking about when the academy is so focused on, you know, a lacrimal view of the world, a sad looking down at your shoes. They hate success. They don't think success can be had, but at the expense of someone else. And that you shouldn't be successful. They don't want you healthy. They want you sick. That's what universal masking was all about, to prove that we were so sick in a sick society. That's why they would mandate vaccines for people that didn't need them at a universal level. Of course, COVID was a great testing ground for all of that. And when you combine all that, health, wealth, and happiness, you can understand why about a year ago there was such a rejection of that conference at ASU that our friend Ann Atkinson put on. It didn't matter really at the end of the day that it was Dennis Prager and Robert Kiyosaki and Dr. Gallopan. It just didn't matter who they were. They were going to find a reason to try and take it down based on the very title. It goes right up and in the face. It's a punch in the face to everything the modern university stands for: health, wealth, and happiness. They want none of that. That, to them, is a three-headed horseman, I suppose, or the three-headed horseman of an apocalypse to their worldview. They don't believe we can be a healthy society. They don't believe we can be a wealthy society, and they don't believe we should be a happy society. So that's how you can, you know, take the genus and go after the species. The genus was that title. The species was the individuals who were speaking on its behalf, which is why you get an Orthodox Jew being called a white nationalist, or an Asian American like Mr. Kiyosaki being called a white nationalist. That's how they do it. The labels don't matter. That's how revolutionaries act. If you're against the revolution, any excuse will do. In the Soviet Union, it was the abuse of psychiatry. You were mentally ill. And you, of course, will see that here. If you don't have the right worldview politically, you will be condemned as a racist, a bigot, or now I guess they've so worn down those phrases, they bring out and trot out fascist. It brings me to this op-ed in the Wall Street Journal from about a week ago that I didn't want to let slip, from one Kevin John Williams. He writes, "Do I deserve to jump the line? If I say yes, I may play a leading role in ending the scourge of arteriosclerosis, also known as a hardening of the arteries. If I play fair, I may lose the opportunity to save people around the world from heart attacks and strokes. I'm angry at the National Institutes of Health for putting me in this position. I'm even angrier it has done so in the name of racial equity. My quandary comes down to whether I should check the box on an upcoming NIH grant application attesting to my recent African heritage. Since at least 2015, the NIH has asserted its belief in the intrinsic superiority of racially diverse research teams, all but stating that such diversity influences funding decisions. My family's origins qualify me under the federal definition of African American, yet I feel it's immoral and narcissistic to use race to gain an advantage over other applicants. All that should matter is the merit of my application and the body of my work, which is generally accepted as foundational in arteriosclerosis research. You know, I gotta say, reward this man. If Trump becomes president, reward him and make him the head of HHS. Put him on the cabinet. He writes, "I discovered my African heritage as an adult, though I had wondered about it since elementary school. My father, a professor of physics at the University of Delaware, was a Renaissance man who talked with his children about everything except his background. His skin was dark and his black hair tightly curled, but he fooled everyone by saying that he was a small part American Indian. He hid his birth family, even from our mother, revealing only after a decade of marriage and four children that he had two siblings. My siblings and I slowly gleaned additional information, that two of his four grandparents were members of an African Methodist Episcopal church, for example. But the full truth long eluded us. I stumbled on it after taking a genetic test in 2011. I am part Bantu, a major ethno-linguistic grouping in West, Central, and Southern Africa. I'm proud of my heritage. I'm even prouder of my father, who overcame poverty and racism of early mid 20th century to become an internationally renowned scientist. He hid his identity, and so have I until now. In the era of affirmative action, I didn't want my research called into question, as if my papers were published preferentially because of my ancestry. Nor did I want anyone to doubt my appointments and funding, as if they were racial spoils rather than a reward for good work. Moreover, I have always wanted to be able to look my Asian American colleagues in the eye. They are at the bottom of the current racial caste system, with the knowledge that I didn't use race to steal an opportunity from them." I want to pick up on this. This is important and relates to an interesting study about McKinsey and Company and diversity as well. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-5080-960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I'll return to this op-ed in a moment. I just wanted to make a point before I forgot. About two weeks ago, a liberal columnist in the Arizona Republic, I don't remember if it was E.J. Montini or Greg Moore, I just don't remember which one, was making the point that, you know, whenever there's criminal gangs being reported on, it's almost always reported on when they're African-American and never when they're white. And yet here in Arizona, we have, you know, what had been labeled the Gilbert goons that aren't getting any national attention because they're white and they're suburban. And I just, you know, I just wonder if there will be a retraction, because you couldn't turn on Fox News today without seeing story after story after story about the Gilbert goons. And ironically, I wonder if that will get attention at CNN or MSNBC. It was the conservative channel, Fox, that picked it up as a national or international story. So whoever that one of you was at the Arizona Republic who wrote that that nonsense. I hope you'll do a retraction and credit Fox with making it a national story beyond the Arizona Republic and local news here. Anyway, this is what happens with these race games. They just turn out to be artificial and meaningless. You know, they almost always do, which is the point of this op-ed that I'm reading from the Wall Street Journal from this African-American scientist. In mid-February, the NIH announced it would soon solicit applications for a grant to perform research that I and others have publicly advocated for years, treating arteriosclerosis in younger people instead of the current focus on the elderly. Such research would likely prevent the disease's advance, saving countless dollars in healthcare and lost productivity and, more importantly, lives. The application process will open in October. I'm already assembling a study team. I want the money. But what's the best way to get it? The NIH's recent announcement commands applicants, quote, to recruit individuals from diverse backgrounds, including individuals from underrepresented groups, for participation in the study team, close quote. The meaning is clear. Teams that overtly include African-American researchers are more likely to get funding. I don't want to elbow a colleague out of the way, especially one who might have a better application. I'd rather win because my team's application shows the most promise, reflecting the decades of work that has helped make this specific NIH initiative possible. If I refuse to identify myself as African American, our application is more likely to lose on diversity grounds. It's a double wrong. Not only is the system rigged based on non-scientific and possibly illegal criteria, it encourages me to join in the rigging. Truth be told, I made my decision years ago. When my study team files our application, it won't know my West African origins. If we don't get the grant, so be it. I refuse to engage in a moral wrong in pursuit of a moral good, even one as important as saving lives from the leading killer on earth. My father, who struggled against racism to achieve so much on the merits of his own work, would never forgive me for checking the box to grab a race-based advantage. And no matter what happens, I can never forgive the NIH for re-injecting racism into medical research. Good for Dr. Williams. Good for Dr. Kevin John Williams. I hope he does get his grant, and I hope he does become something high up, either at NIH or perhaps even as a secretary of Health and Human Services. That kind of honest talk is important, and it has race diversity quotas very little to do with output. Charlie Kirk was pointing out a new study came out starting a decade ago. McKinsey, one of the richest and most well-connected management consulting companies, produced a whole series of studies claiming dramatic improvements to business success when companies prioritized diversity for their executives rather than just merit. These studies were used to justify sweeping anti-male, anti-Asian, and anti-white discrimination at hundreds of U.S. companies, universities, and government agencies. Now, an updated analysis by two economic professors finds that the studies were totally bogus. There was no link between greater diversity and greater sales, greater growth, or higher stock prices. Yeah, it's always just false when it comes to something that is false in judging merit and quality, race. We'll be right back. Little Ronnie Millsap there, daydreams about night things in the middle of the afternoon. You know what people daydream about in the middle of the afternoon, young David?
Supper.
Dinner. Dinner.
I knew that was coming.
That's
yes.
A night thing.
They daydream about dinner.
Yes.
Because they haven't already had
And
it.
When the night comes, their daydreams come true, as Ronnie Millsap would sing. Let's go to Dave in Surprise. Hello, Dave.
Thanks so much, teacher.
How are you?
Feels like old times. I'm very blessed and highly favored. Yourself?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you said that, Dave. It's easy to get down. We sometimes do it here because the news is often negative and things are cruddy in a lot of respects. But, you know, I was talking to a friend the other day who's going through a hard time, a friend up in New York. He's just going through a rough time at the age that you and he and I are probably fairly close to. And he said, but, you know, I still have it better than probably 90% of the world. And I thought, you know, it's important to keep that perspective. We still have it better than 90% of the world. Anyway, just a thought. Sorry. Long way to say we're doing good, and I appreciate you saying you're doing
best. No, it's great. I'm glad everybody's doing well.
Yes.
So we talked about this quite a few times in 2019 and 2020 and beyond. When they were burning down Somaliopolis, we chatted about this. You know, the culture has not allowed plantation politics to be a driver anymore in the realm of politics and just consumption. So now we've moved on, we've talked about this before, to the grievance culture. So let's figure out the intersectionality of every single person on the planet and pit them against 10 or 20 other people and see if we can just stoke up fear and animus in all of them. And that's how the cultural elites, our establishment class, our psychopathic overlords, get control over us. So we are duty-bound, as we, the people, to reject these notions. We just went through this exercise at my work, and a lot of us put up quite a push. We give in at the end of the day, but we go through this DEI training. You know what DEI stands for, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did my monologue.
Didn't earn it. Yeah. Well, I missed
it
today.
Oh, well, I didn't use that phrase. I didn't use that phrase. That's a different, right.
You can cut it if you want. It's all good.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, but you know what? Some people are courageously speaking out about this. There's a podcast. I don't know if you ever see it. With Glenn Lowry, who's a professor of Brown, African American scholar at Brown University, and he does it with John McWhorter, who's an African American professor of linguistics at Columbia. I don't know if you've ever seen them, but Glenn Lowry's an interesting guy. He's been conservative, he's been liberal, he's been conservative, he's conservative again, but he's probably one of the great living economists. You know, he's not at Thomas Sowell's level, but he's pretty darn close. And he was on a rant last week saying the thing he hates so much about what DEI has done is it undermines all his hard work and achievement. You know, he said, I worked damn hard my whole life, and he did. He used to be a professor at Boston University. He was really quite a scholar, tremendous output. He worked damn hard, and he said, you know, everything I do now will have the gloss of someone wondering whether I did it because of my brain and my hard work and my effort, or whether I was passed along and rewarded because of the color of my skin, something I have no control over. Some people are waking up to it, not quite enough. I think it is psychopathic. I think that's a good word for it, Dave, to use something like race as a qualification for anything. And I think it's psychopathic because we went through the experience in Germany from 1933 to 1945 of the ruling of psychopaths who did just that. And I thought it ended at Nuremberg. I really did. I really did. And at least I thought our society was geared to making it end at Nuremberg. And the notion that we use, I mean, the notion that we even need to, I mean, if you listen to that op-ed I just wrote, or if you look at tremendous success of people that didn't, they don't need it. They don't need this kind of race-based judgment. I'll say one more thing, and then I'll let you have the final word or whatever you want. But, you know, in 2007, then-Senator Barack Obama, thinking about running for president, spoke at the Edmund Pettus Bridge, famous civil rights iconographic bridge, saying we're the Joshua generation. The Moses generation of Martin Luther King and John Lewis got us 90% of the way, he said. That was his number, 90%. He said, we're the Joshua generation that will take us to the promised land to get the last 10%. As Larry Elder likes to point out, that was before he was twice elected presidency of the United States. You think that cut into that 10% a little bit? 3, 5, 8 points? You bet it did. You bet it did. Why are we so re-racialized again? Psychopathy.
Well, it's out of his hand. He was the divider in chief. He took every accomplishment he and people like him from every walk of life with whatever immutable traits and characteristics they had, and again, pit them against each other. That's all. It's full Marxism. We used to talk about this. We'd joke. It's Animal Farm, Brave New World in 1984. I'll mash it up into one. Now I'll just cut to the chase. It's Alice in Wonderland. Everything's upside down. Thanks, teacher. I appreciate your show, sir.
Oh, you're very nice, and you always call me that. I learn. I'm a student. I'm a lifelong student. I never got a teaching appointment. I was turned down for some teaching appointments, and I don't think because of race. Possibly, I don't think so. Possibly, but for ideology, I'm certain of. I know it wasn't credentials. I know that very well. But you don't need to call me that. That's I haven't earned it. I'm just a student with y'all. We learn together here. Someone once said education is like a buffet. We all kind of go up to the table together. Who said that? Leo Buscaglia, maybe? Maybe Leo Buscaglia. He has one of my favorite quotes of all time. It's a nice thing. I should put it up somewhere prominent in my home. It's only the gentle who are let me get it. It is the weak who are cruel. Gentleness can only be expected from the strong. It is the weak who are cruel. Gentleness can only be expected from the strong. Leo Buscaglia. If you haven't read his works, I know he's easy to make fun of. He was onto something serious in the 70s. You can watch his lectures on YouTube as well. All right, we'll be right back. Portions of this show brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. They're based here locally. You can visit them. They're right on Chauncey Lane in North Phoenix. I've been there a number of times. They won't give you a sales pitch. They won't ask you to sign anything. But what YRefi does is offer a secure investment, actually helps people, in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. You can turn your income on or off with YRefi. You can compound it, whatever you like. And with YRefi, there are no fees, and there is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. If you don't visit them in person, check them out online at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or call them at 888-YREFI-24. 888-YREFI-24. Young David, you were making a point to me off air that would be good to make to everyone on air.
Sure, and I'm going to make it to you too, because I don't think you're listening. You don't have to have a degree to be a teacher. In fact, I would say most of the... No, I'll go so far as to say the most important teachers in anyone's life are their parents, usually dad.
Why do you think I wasn't listening?
To the caller.
To the caller?
Who says you're a teacher.
Oh, I was
Because you're a teacher to millions
well,
out
Well, I
here.
Don't know about that. You make a very good point about the most, parents are the most important teachers, and they don't need a degree. You're absolutely right. This is why I've never understood the antagonism to homeschooling. You can't pay a parent enough to be a good teacher to their child. And when we attach the thought of that, people will sometimes derisively say, well, they're amateurs. They don't have professional degrees and how to. Look at what the professionals have done to the teaching profession. They've ruined it. Let's bring back the word amateur to its original meaning, can we? It wasn't supposed to be a derisive term or a pejorative term. It's from the word amore, love. It's someone who does something because they love to do it, not because they're paid to do it. And you cannot pay a parent enough to be a good teacher. So you're absolutely right about this, young David. The parents are a child's first, most important, and all but indispensable teacher, William J. Bennett used to say, still says, I think. And let's keep that in mind. It's a great point. And the mark of a good school, one that welcomes parental involvement.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.